Keith Greer is the gentleman representing Rebecca Zahow's family in the wrongful death suit against Adam Shacknigh in San Diego. I caught up with Mr. Greer just a moment ago, and he talked about today, March 7th, 2018, as being a very good day in court.
You know, we had a fantastic day in court today. Our knot-tying expert, Lindsay Philpott, is not only incredibly competent and knowledgeable about knots and knot-tying and binding, but really a gentleman and a scholar, literally. Really a pleasure to watch him educate the judge and the jury about what was going on here. It was a great day.
Well, I did read an article today, and it did say that the opposing attorney was able to get your knot expert to admit that when he tied the knot in court, it was in the wrong place. Is that a big deal?
You know, it's funny what gets pulled out in the media.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Philpott tied the knots around the mannequin's ankle. We had an actual replica of Rebecca's body there in court today. And he tied the knots around her ankle. And then he tied the knots, which are figure eight lashings, you know, about five or six layers of figure eight lashings around the ankles and the same around the wrist. And then it's just tied off with not a really complicated knot, just a clove hitch, you know, half hitch. You know, actually, the knots themselves aren't that complicated to tie down the lashings. But he initially tied it the way that it was done and appears on the autopsy photos, et cetera. And then he pulled the knots on the ankle, which was initially facing towards her body. And he pulled it between the ankles and stretched the knot that was coming out of the ankle knot towards her hands and pulled the line that was the remainder of the rope from the knot on her hands towards the ankle. He put those two ends together. So basically, mm-hmm. The knots on the ankles were connected by a single line to the knots on the hands. And he taped them together. And he opined that the reason he did this was, it's interesting, he said, that if you take these two ends of rope, they one exactly equal the distance between the hands and the feet, which for the position of her being hogtied. And the way the ends of the ropes are cut, they were probably together at one point in time, and a single cut separated them. So when he pulled the knots together into hogtie fashion, that made the knot on the ankles no longer in the right position.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I'm explaining this well. That's why we used the visual aids, so that he could actually tie it in front of the jury so they could see what's going on.
Right, and so when the pictures were taken, that one string was it was not hogtied at all. So that would mean that it would be in a different position. How did you determine? You said it was because the length of string was the exact length. So you're saying that Rebecca was basically hogtied when she went over the balcony, correct?
Yeah. If you see her lying on the ground on the autopsy pictures, there's the ropes tie her ankle. At the end of the knot, there's about a 10-inch piece of rope left over. And then if you go to the hands are tied, and coming out of the hand knots heading towards the feet, there's a piece of rope that's about 28 or so inches long. You add those two ropes together, and it's the exact distance between her hands and going up to her ankles with her knees bent in a hogtie position.
Oh wow, that makes that's a game changer. That's big.
It is. It was revelating.
So, our member, I believe her name was Lisa, was correct. She's the one that asked you, were her hands and ankles tied together? Who do you think cut the rope? Do you think it was Adam? Was it
reach out to her? Reach out to her and give her a kudos, because when she said that, I had just found out about that maybe 3 or 4 days earlier. When we had, we didn't discover that until we were actually putting the knots on the body. And Mr. Philpott I went up to Long Beach with the body, and we set it out. And he actually, I said, tie these knots exactly like they were tied, you know, by the defendant. And the revelation came at that moment. Wow, look at these two ends. They're cut the same. Look what happens when you put them together. Oh, that makes sense, because this is a typical hog tie type knot combo. And so when she asked that, I was impressed, but obviously couldn't talk about it because it had not been shared with the court yet.
Well, I have to admit, we do have incredible on our site, and you're so gracious to talk to us. I definitely will pass kudos along to Lisa. I'm sure she'll be absolutely thrilled with it. Did the defense have any comeback for that when he was talking to your witness?
You know, I think they went more for credentials than attacking, you know, his expertise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he testified that there's only about, you know, six, maybe eight people on the planet with his level of knot tying expertise. The defendants have one of them who's probably the most academic, you know, meaning, you know, has published more materials than the others.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they really did, was try to attack his credentials as an expert, and some of his testimony at his deposition. At his deposition, he had been asked a question if he knew what Adam Shacknai's occupation was, and he said no.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking at him saying, hold on, you know, we've been talking about this for months, you know. Why are you thinking? And you know what? He just had a brain fart. You know, the name didn't click. He wasn't getting it. And then later in the deposition, he came up and said, you know, he did know, and you know, he cleared the air. But I think it was just nerves probably a little bit. And and just, you know, it's interesting. At depositions, you know, you're getting asked a lot of questions, and whatever you say is on the record forever. And if you slip up at all with any type of comment or response, that's slightly off, slightly ambiguous, and then you get on the stand and say something that's not exactly the same, it's very easy for the other side to start quoting deposition transcripts. And, well, you said this in your depo, but you say this now. And it's a good trial thing. These are very good lawyers. You know, these guys, they've got a team of, what, four, five, six attorneys over there working against us. They're very good trial lawyers. They're tenacious. It's hard for somebody to stay on the stand for 6-7 hours, you know, getting battered. You know, it's like an interrogation,
right?
And hold on, but this Lindsay Philpott, I tell you, he's such a gentleman. I hope our paths cross again. Really interesting to listen to. I think he was very educational for the jury today.
We have a lot of questions concerning Dr. Weck. He is scheduled to testify. Is that right?
Yes, Monday.
Monday. And what is he going to testify to? Are you able to talk about that?
Yeah, to the extent that this has been disclosed in our summary judgment papers and some other motions, he's going to testify that she was more probably than not strangled before she was hanged, that she was actually dead or dying before she was thrown over the balcony, that there are injuries to her body. In particular, a deep bruise on her right lower back that are inconsistent with the hanging. There's just no way they would have occurred in the hanging. They'd be more consistent with an assault earlier before the hanging. That the four blows to the back of her head or the back right side of her head were sufficient to make her unconscious, or at least semi-unconscious and potentially completely unconscious before she was thrown over the railing, actually before she was even strangled, because they were made when she was alive. I think that's all that's been disclosed publicly. He has other things he's going to talk about of interest, but I think those are the few that have been publicly disclosed in court.
Okay, I'm just going to ask you a few more questions because I know you're exhausted and you have another big day tomorrow. So was Rebecca left-handed, or Adam, were either one of them left-handed?
No.
Okay. And also, did you ever find out who called P, is it Finks? Is that who that is? So quickly. Do you know who I'm talking about?
It's Paul Finks. He was the ex-district attorney in town. He showed up at the scene. Actually, it was that evening, not that morning. there was some confusion early on that he was one of the first responders, but it was actually evening when he showed up. It wasn't, I forget what the time was on the photograph that was taken of him, but it was actually in the evening. And I do know, I don't believe it has been disclosed yet, so I'm probably not at liberty to talk about it. It's an interesting issue. It's not super material. We took his deposition, and it's interesting. I don't know that it gets in court. I don't know if it's that significant.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll be able to tell us later, or you can tell us now.
Yes.
Nobody's listening. It's just between us.
It just does. Go ahead.
Just us.
You're gonna have to ply me with a few cocktails before you can get me.
Oh, that's good. Oh, very good to know.
And then, okay. That's hard to speak so far away.
Yeah, exactly. A couple more questions here. This is kind of a big one. This is from IMP. In general, how do you plan to overcome the gaping holes in Rebecca's investigation, especially with regard to evidence collection and testing? How are you going to do that?
You know, we're stuck with the investigation we have. Our DNA expert, who was banned yesterday, has said that she thought it was unusual, for example, that, 10 of 14 surfaces that were tested for DNA that were the type of material that could be wiped off, shiny surfaces, smooth surfaces, that they expected to find DNA. They didn't, like doorknobs, like the paint tube that the black paint came out of. She thought it was unusual. She didn't attribute it to the investigation because she checked the testing processes and hopefully the tests were good. And, it's when we know that Adam, and this was discussed in open so I can share it, we know that Adam Shack and I cut Rebecca down. I mean, he held the rope. He held the knife that cut her down and had this, saw it vigorously to cut the rope. He held her, sat her down. He loosened the ropes on her wrist to check her pulse. He took the gag out of her mouth. He gave her mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. He gave her CPR chest compressions. May or may not have loosened the noose. But he's all over her, right? All over her. We know that. But there's none of his DNA found on her or anything that is, associated with her. And our DNA expert said, some people just don't shed. Some people are shedders. They shed a lot. Some people don't. And I think that just may be what we're dealing with here, that we know things were wiped down. That we know. I mean, because the paint tube that was obviously purchased by Rebecca, carried by her to the house, put in her art supplies, and squeezed by whoever painted the message on the door 20, 30 times. We know there should be fingerprints, and we know there should be DNA on it, and there's none. So we're confident that the jury will believe that that was wiped out. But I don't know if the person who did the wiping down would have known that they weren't a shedder, and weren't going to leave DNA anyway. I might have changed things. Interesting. It's interesting.
Do you think it's a possibility that Adam is lying about giving her mouth to mouth and not lying about cutting her down, but giving her mouth to mouth and saying all those things that he tried to do?
And, that could be. That's a possibility. That's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's a possibility that she wasn't even hanged for very long.
Right.
We don't see any lividity in her hands or in her feet, which you would expect if a body was hanging for a long time. The blood would be pooling. You would see, like a purple dark feet, purple dark hands. We don't see any of that. So there's issues. There's going to be a lot of, that's a great question, by the way, going back to where this started from. How are you going to deal with all the holes in the investigation?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to, you have to make do with what we have. I'm still falling back to, I think, the strongest evidence we have is that phrase painted on the door. I think that message was very, very focused, and it was written by somebody who knew that Rebecca had saved Max through CPR,
mm-hmm.
knew the family business, and it had not been published to the media yet. When Max fell, it was very private. It didn't get public until Rebecca was hanged. And then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. the whole thing came out. So I think I can narrow the universe of who did this to somebody mm-hmm. that had intimate knowledge of this family's tragedy and Rebecca being there to save Max. And with that, the only person who was unaccounted for is the defendant, Adam.
Your writing expert said that basically between the two, between Rebecca and Adam, Adam wrote what was on the wall. He spray painted. And when you look at the evidence, when you look at the samples, again, it is obvious that it's not Rebecca. Do you think you're going to have trouble at all saying it's not Rebecca, therefore it has to be Adam? Do you think the jury is going to agree with you, or do you think that's a hump that you're going to have to overcome?
Again, there's no single piece of evidence that solves this case. I am highly, highly, highly confident that a jury will find this is murder. I am reasonably confident that it will be the defendant will be found to be the culprit with the totality of the evidence. You can't take any one piece, although I think the saying is fairly powerful. But when you take every piece is consistent with Adam. We have the handwriting comparison that's consistent with Adam. We have the knots that are tied that are consistent with a tugboat pilot or a tugboat captain. We've got the phrase. We've got his behavior, which this is out there because I shared it in open, that when he saw her hanging there, he didn't run over to help her. I was watching, I forget which show it was, but it was a show that was covering another murder case, and they interviewed the jurors, and the jurors said the most important factor to them was when the defendant saw the body, they didn't try and help. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know about you guys, but if this is somebody I care about, if it's my brother's girlfriend or my sister's boyfriend or whoever it is, when I first see that, I'm running over to help. I'm running over to lift him up. I'm going to say, are you okay? I'm going to run over and check. Mm-hmm. And that was the reaction here. And so, it's no one piece says, here's Adam's picture, 100% it was Adam. But every piece that you look at says, yep, could be Adam. Yep, that one could be Adam too.
I know I said just one more question, but I lied, and witnesses lie occasionally, so I'm going to add a few more if that's okay.
I learned never to say that one more question. That never happened.
Was Adam's phone analyzed, and if it was, do you have the results of that?
Gosh, we do. I think we have everybody's phone results.
Mm-hmm. And are you able to talk about them? Or?
You know what? They're not out there, but there's nothing out there that appears fishy. I mean, everybody's recollection or testimony about who they called appears to be consistent with the records.
And what about his clothes? Were his clothes taken into evidence?
Yeah, they did a full body search. They checked him for bruises, et cetera. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Remember his clothes? I mean, he was there that night. I mean, he had plenty of time to shower, shave,
Right.
Now his other stuff wasn't, the stuff that he was wearing that day may have been, I don't know if they checked that. I know they checked his fingers, under his fingernails,
mm-hmm.
Et cetera. But,
And is this true that Rebecca's clothes, the clothes she was wearing that day, have never been found?
They have never been found.
See, that to me is just, boy. Okay, and are there any background witnesses that are going to be coming up to describe their relationships with Adam or anything personal about Adam?
I don't think so.
Okay. And also, why is there still confusion in the house the morning Max fell? Rebecca's younger sister was there. She should be able to tell us who was in the house. Is there confusion about who was there at the time Max fell?
No.
Okay, there's no confusion. Okay, good.
Well, people talk about it, and speculate about it, but I'm very comfortable that some of it I can't get into. I will let your listeners think, what would an attorney do to make sure that somebody was telling the truth? And if they, you know, if they did that, how would they be able to tell that if somebody that was there said nobody else was there but them, you know, how would an attorney feel comfortable that they were telling the truth? You can probably figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very confident that there was nobody else there. Yeah.
And don't you think it speaks volumes that Adam's team worked extremely hard to keep Rebecca and Adam's handwriting out of evidence? I mean, that was that seemed like it was a tough going. That was a long time
working that in. Oh, that was brutal. That was this is taking real estate an inch at a time. And you're going to find that, you know, in their opening statement, they said it was suicide. But they said, but if it wasn't suicide, it wasn't Adam who did it. And I think that what they're probably going to wind up doing is they're going to have to back off from that a little bit, not suicide, and yield. And their real battle is it wasn't Adam. There's not going to be any witness there that says they saw Adam there. There's not going to be any DNA or fingerprints of Adam there. And so that's where they're really going to be hunkering down. That's why, with regard to the handwriting, boy, what a battle. They knocked me down. The first day of our handwriting guy, they knocked me down. I was on the mat out. You know, fortunately, I was able to regroup and then that next day get the rest of our handwriting evidence in. But they're very good lawyers. You know, that's... they probably celebrated that first night saying, hey, we kept out half of his good evidence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they had as enjoyable a get-together that next day after I got it back in. So,
and let's talk about we'll wrap this up and let you go rest up for tomorrow. Let's talk about the GoFundMe for Rebecca. It's done by Rebecca's family, but it's for these experts that are coming in. Like you said, they have given you a break. You're doing this pro bono and taking money out of your own pocket to help Rebecca's family. Tell us a little bit about the GoFundMe, and I'll give the address.
Yeah, it's a GoFundMe account. Actually, if anybody just Googles the GoFundMe, and then they type in for search either Rebecca Zahow or Justice for Rebecca. And I think, you know, the family needs about $50,000. Like I mentioned on the last time, Doug has sold his truck. And that's helping out. And I think he has another off-road vehicle that he's selling. The family's pulling together. We've tapped what we had. The other lawyer that's co-counsel with me came up and put up some money, which helped us out. You know, we're about halfway to the six figures that we need to get through. And, yeah, it'll happen. I hope. I really appreciate it. I want to thank everybody. It's, I don't know, 40 or 50 people have donated thus far. I think they're just under $4,000 in the GoFundMe.
Right there. Almost at 4,000, 52 people. And again, as we have said, $5. Everybody gives $5. You've got your money fairly quickly if everybody just popped on and did that. So I don't want anybody to think that $5 isn't worth it. It is, right?
This is a good thing to be a part of. You know, this is,
yes.
And literally every dollar. Every dollar is important. And so anybody can help out. We'd appreciate it. The family appreciates it. They've kind of jumped into this. We've all jumped into this with blind faith, saying, okay, failure's not an option. Let's get it done, really not knowing how we're going to do it. So let's just hope we keep getting support because we need it.
There you heard it from the man, Keith Greer, hoping to continue to get support at the GoFundMe page for Rebecca. GoFundMe.com. And then just type in the search engine, Justice for Rebecca. It'll pop right up. $5. If everybody could give $5, it would really, really make a big difference. And all of the money goes to the experts that they're flying in, like Dr. Sarah Weck, who can help prove that Rebecca really was murdered. I want to apologize for all that noise that you may have heard throughout this whole interview. See, I have a nice little home studio, and I also am in training to be a crazy cat lady. So I have three cats, hoping to get to 350 by the end of the week. Anyway, I have one cat, Ivan. He's not a cat, he's a human in a cat costume. He always jumps on my lap while I'm working and puts his arms around my neck like a kid and then just hangs on. Well, he's never done it when I've had my headgear on and the microphone out. Well, he did it tonight. And I didn't want to interrupt the interview. I just wanted it to flow. And I'm trying to get him off of me so I can concentrate without having his paws just sunk, His claws sunk into my flesh. Anyway, next week, Ivan and the rest of the gang, they'll be outside with somebody else playing, while I am inside my home studio playing like I know what I'm doing. Hey, everybody, we'll see you on WebSleuths.com. And don't forget, there is a new edition of Web Sleuths Radio coming up in a few days. Tricia Griffith saying so long. Take care. Bye-bye.